Hello, I'm Hannah, and I'm going to do today's reading from Lamentations 4, verses 1 to 8, 12 to 13, and 21 to 22. How the gold has lost its lustre, the fine gold become dull. The sacred gems are scattered at the head of every street. How the precious sons of Zion, once worth their weight in gold, are now considered as pots of clay, the work of a potter's hands. Even jackals offer their breasts to nurse their young, but my people have become heartless, like ostriches in the desert. Because of thirst, the infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth. The children beg for bread, but no one gives it to them. Those who once ate delicacies are destitute in the streets. Those nurtured in purple now lie on ash heaps. The punishment of my people is greater than that of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment without a hand turned to help her. Their princes were brighter than snow and whiter than milk, their bodies more ruddy than rubies, their appearance like sapphires. But now they are blacker than soot, they are not recognised in the streets. Their skin has shrivelled on their bones, it's become as dry as a stick. The kings of the earth did not believe, nor did any of the world's people, that enemies and foes could enter the gates of Jerusalem. But it happened because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests, who shed within her the blood of the righteous. Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, you who live in the land of Uz. But to you also the cup will be passed. You will be drunk and stripped naked. O daughter of Zion, your punishment will end. He will not prolong your exile, but O daughter of Edom, he will punish your sin and expose your wickedness.
Hello, my name is Andre. It's really, really good to have you with us this morning, whether this is one of the first times you've logged on and joined our community, or you've done it dozens and dozens of times. It's really good to have you with us. As I said, my name's Andre. I've been part of the leadership team here in St. Philip's for about 2 years now. And again, apologies for some of the technical difficulties. Let's just assume if I drop out or something goes wrong, God wants it to be a bit of a DIY service, you know, open bracket, insert profound comment here and continue, maybe. Or if I do blank out, just assume that you've missed the funniest thing you're never going to get to hear. Maybe, probably not. But anyway, we'll just muddle along together and I'm sure it's going to be great. So as Gareth said, we are continuing our series on Lamentations, which is what we've been looking at through Lent. And the question that I want to explore today together is, why have hope in God? It's an important question. Why do we put our hope in God? Why do those who we know put their hope in God? And I remember when I was a Christian, or just became a Christian, should I say, and my old vicar when I lived in London said to me, look, Andre, in our society, by and large, you know, it's a bit reductionist, but by and large, if people have a good house, if they have a good job / reputation, if they have money in the bank, and family and friends, then they think life is good. They have hope. And he said to me, what if God took all of those away, or all of those were lost? If you lost your house, lost your job, lost all the money in the bank, and heaven forbid, lost your friends and family, would you still call God good? Would you still put hope in God? Do you put hope in those things and then God? Or do you put hope in God first? And it really rocked me, and as you can see, it still has an effect on me today. And that was obviously a hypothetical situation, but we've all been in times and been in situations which have been really hard and tangibly and visibly a struggle. Just a few weeks ago, a friend of mine was sharing about there was this local council estate which was known for deprivation and crime. It was really a tough area. And this church moved in, and they tried to get involved, tried to, you know, become part of the community. And then, in the words of my friends, they moved out after 2 years because they were tired of their house getting broken into and cars being nicked. Now, and then they moved out. So they're there about 2 years and they moved out. Now, I'm not commenting on whether they should have moved in the first place, whether they should have moved out at that point. But for whatever reason, life had become rubbish. They found themselves in a tough situation. So why have hope in God in that moment? I have a friend of mine who became a Christian, gave up a lot of the drugs they were doing, and they were sleeping around, and it was damaging them and the people that were involved. And they became a Christian, you know, gave it all up, went on this amazing journey. And then after a couple of years, let's say they fell off the wagon, started to repeat patterns of behavior which weren't helpful, started to do drugs, etc., etc. And, you know, you could say, oh, it was their fault, they're making bad decisions. You could say bad luck. Whatever the reason, when life gets rubbish again, when we fall off that pedestal, when life gets rubbish, why have hope in God? I mean, me personally, I may have shared this here before, so forgive me, but a few years ago, I started my own charity, and I thought it was going to go amazing. I thought, you know, people had prayed for me, so it's going to be really big, it's going to be really influential, and I really felt like God was going to unlock some resources and bring key people around me. And I thought the charity's just going to go, you know, in this amazing direction. And it didn't. Things got hard, resources I thought were guaranteed weren't, people I thought I could trust let me down. And whatever the reason, life became rubbish. It wasn't going exactly the way I wanted it to. So in that moment, when our dreams are shattered, when things don't look as good as we'd hoped they would, why have hope in God? And let's be honest, we're all going through something during this pandemic, during this lockdown. And I know a few people who during the first lockdown, obviously it's a pandemic, we wish it didn't happen, but during the first lockdown, they thought, you know, there are elements which were quite good, slowing down the pace of life, being able to learn new skills, whatever it was. This third lockdown, I don't know anyone who's thrived. I mean, this third lockdown, everyone I speak to just says, going rubbish, life is rubbish, this is an awful situation. And so in those moments, why have hope in God? Whether it's through situations that, you know, we've made some bad choices, we've deserved or totally undeserved, whatever the reason, when we find ourselves in those moments, when life is rubbish, why have hope in God? And I believe Lamentations 4 today can help us answer this question. And now something that's been said throughout this whole series, I'm just going to repeat again. We can't just say Lamentations is exactly like a modern pandemic. And one of the main reasons for that is in Lamentations, through the whole book, the five laments, the whole book, people are saying we deserve to be punished. This is our fault. We've made bad decisions. So it's not like a pandemic, a virus, a global COVID situation where no one created it. It's no one's fault. So it's not exactly the same. But doesn't mean it's irrelevant. I believe it can help us answer this question. When things get rubbish, because it's our fault or someone else's fault or whatever, when things get rubbish, why have hope in God? And that's what we're going to be exploring today. And do feel free to keep your Bibles open, reopen your Bible apps, because I'm going to be looking at this in quite a lot of detail, quite a lot, and practically verse by verse. So do keep your books open on Lamentations 4. But while you do that, just to give a bit of context, so chapter 1 and 2, we've had this kind of dialogue between a narrator and Zion, Jerusalem, kind of the personified city of God. And that's why in the earlier Bible readings in this series, we had like two people reading it to get those two voices. Chapter 3 is this narrator, this very intense outpouring to God you saw in chapter 3. And in chapter 4-5, it's kind of between the narrator and God's people. So a bit like Zion, but a bit different. So there is a gear change here. So we see in chapter 4, the narrator and God's people speaking. And just to remind us, there's been a two-year siege. So Jerusalem were fighting the Babylon army. There was this two-year war, essentially. And then the Babylonians eventually won. They sieged the city. They killed a lot of people. They abused a lot of people. Awful atrocities. And then they leave the people that are still there with this awful, awful famine. So it's just an awful situation. War followed by famine. And people being surrounded by death and abuse. And then just one more point about context before we dig into the text. What we see going on in Lamentations, I'd argue, is really, really clever. Because what you get in chapter 1 and 2 is they're building up to this very, very intense outpouring in chapter 3. There's a lot of emotion, and the narrator even talks to God and talks about God directly. And so you have this real, real intense build-up. Chapter 3 is kind of this pinnacle, and we're going to look at that again a bit later. And then chapter 4 and 5, it's a bit of a whimper. The intensity kind of goes, I mean, it's still just as miserable, unfortunately, but the intensity goes, and it's not quite the same. And it's kind of mirroring the suffering Jerusalem is going through, that you had this war, this climax, this awful thing happen, but yet there's still famine. There's still this emptiness, there's still this mundaneness. And in the flow of the book is mirroring the thing which the book is talking about, which is very, very clever. And sometimes in our Western context, we can forget that because we kind of see the Bible as a rule book. I'll open up to this chapter and tell me what to do. But actually, just reading books as a whole, you know, not just reading them in chapters, but reading it as a whole, reading all of Paul's letters in one go, reading the whole gospel in one go, and just getting the flow and the emotional journey that's going on is just as important. And we don't need a big fat commentary to do that. We don't need to stop in every verse and kind of analyze what does this word exactly mean. All we need is to dedicate time to God and say, I'm going to read this book as a whole and get the flow and the overall narrative. And we see this demonstrated in Lamentations, which is really clever. This intense build-up going up to chapter 3, and then a bit of a whimper and a bit of mundaneness, a bit of emptiness. And that's where we find ourselves in Lamentations 4. And that might be like us. Like maybe you've really engaged with this Lamentation series and you've poured out to God and you've had that lament and you've had that evening or those prayers where you've poured it all out to God, and yet life is still a bit rubbish. Like things haven't quite changed. There's still this mundaneness. Like I can't possibly ask someone to pray for that thing again because you know, I had this experience and they've been doing it for ages, yet things haven't quite changed as quickly as I hoped. And there's this whimper, this tailing off after this intense experience. Or maybe something's happened during lockdown and you thought, oh, this is awful. It can't get any worse than this. And things haven't quite improved, but they're just in this hollow emptiness. That's where we pick up the story in Lamentations chapter 4. How do we process this rubbish? What do we do when things around us aren't as good as we'd hoped they would be by now? So we're going to start in verse 1. Good place to start. So things are really rubbish. They've had this two-year siege, this famine has kicked in, loads of friends and families have been killed or abused, and it's an awful, awful situation. And people, or the narrator, shall I say, are starting to look back and say the past was better than this. Like things just used to be so much better. So verse 1, it says, how the gold has lost its luster, the fine gold become dull, the sacred gems are scattered at every street corner. You know, the gold, the precious things we used to take pride in now look dull. You know, the temple's been ransacked. All the valuable items have been taken off by the Babylonians. There's a few things scattered in the street. But all the things we used to take pride in, things in the past were just so much better. Now even the gold is dull in the present. And this idea continues in verse 2. How the precious children of Zion, once worth their weight in gold, are now considered as pots of clay, the works of the potter's hand. Even our reputation. We used to be worth our weight in gold. We used to be called children of Zion. And now we're just like clay, just like rubbish. No one will give us a second look. Jump down to verse 4. Because of thirst, the infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth. The children beg for bread, but no one will give it to them. Even the most vulnerable in society, the infants who rely on adults for everything, even they're not being cared for. You know, this is below rock bottom. Like, this is worse than we could ever imagine. The past used to be so good. The past used to be great. And this present situation is just rubbish. Again, I'm not trying to say Lamentations can be directly linked to a COVID situation. But those are some of the emotions I'm guessing some of us are going through. The past just used to be so much better before it all went wrong. Things now are rubbish. And it may be because of things that have happened directly because of COVID, loss of job, losing contact with our support group and wider friends. But for whatever the reason, things are not as good as it used to be. And the Lamentations allows us to bring these feelings to God. If we jump on a few more verses, verse 6. The punishment of my people is greater than that of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment without a hand turned to help her. Now, just to give some background to this, Sodom represents like the worst city. In the Old Testament, in the whole Bible, but particularly in the Old Testament, Sodom represents the city which was totally immoral, like totally guilty. There was no redeeming features. It was a city that God destroyed. And it's kind of held up as this example of the worst possible thing people could do. They were guilty. They deserved their punishment. It was awful. And so for the people of God to say, we're worse than Sodom, I mean, that is massive. For the people of God to say that Sodom was destroyed instantly, but our punishment is ongoing. You know, we're worse than that city. We've held up as the worst example. I mean, things in the past just used to be so much better than they are now. And he goes on, the author, to say quite a harrowing thing. He basically says, death is better. Verse 9, those killed by the sword are better off than those who die of famine. Racked with hunger, they waste away for lack of food from the field. The author is leaning into this emotion, being real with God and being honest. And if it couldn't get any worse, you know, we're beneath rock bottom and you think it couldn't get any worse. Yet the next verse, verse 10 says, with their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children who become their food when people are destroyed. Not a pleasant image at the best of times, let alone today of all days. But what is interesting about this verse, it's not saying the bad people. The people we knew were up to no good. The people we couldn't trust. It's saying compassionate women. The people we used to rely on. The people we held up as the example. The people we trusted. Even they are doing these unspeakable things. People we trusted have let us down. And the thing continues because even the priests, even the people, the prophets who are meant to keep us connected to God have let us down. Verse 13. But it happened because of the sin of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests who shed with her the blood of the righteous. Sins of her prophets, the iniquities of her priests. And it goes on in the next few verses to say the priests are now unclean. They now can't do their job. They're totally cut off. We can't trust them at all. Life is rubbish. Have we ever been let down by friends, family, those we used to uphold as the example, those we thought we could trust no matter what? Or what about the things we put our trust in, like the job, reputation, the money in the bank? It's not that these things are bad in themselves, but they can't sustain us. And when we put our hope in them and they fade, then what? When things are rubbish, why have hope in God first and foremost? Verse 17, this is when it moves from I to us and we, and the people of God start talking. Moreover, our eyes failed, looking in vain for help. For our towns, we watched for a nation that could not save us. People of God were looking elsewhere. We were looking for a nation. We were looking in vain for help elsewhere. We weren't looking to God. When things get tough, when things get hard, what is our default? If we're being totally honest with God right now, what is our default? Is it money in the bank so we can rely on self-efficiency and self-autonomy? Is it our job and the reputation and the buzz we get from that? Is it our friends and family? And none of these things are bad necessarily. But is that what we go to give ourselves value? Is that what we go to give ourselves comfort? Or how do we make ourselves better when we're not in the greatest place? Do we pour that drink, that wine, pick up that extra beer? Do we go shopping in order to give us that buzz of getting something new? Social media likes, or my own personal vice, just binge watching TV. Now I'll just binge watch this series for a couple of hours so I go numb. So I don't need to think about the bad stuff. So I don't need to process it. I can ignore it and just go numb. Where do we look for comfort? What do we look for hope to get us through the rubbish times? Because Lamentations is about this raw honesty. So let me say that again. When things get tough, what is our default? Is it the friends and family? Is it money in the bank? Is it reputation? Is it the house, the nice house? Or is it things like drink, shopping, social media, entertainment, the things which distract us and we think can fill the void short term and give us an instant hit rather than waiting on God? When things are rubbish, why have hope in God? And I believe Lamentations gives us an answer. Thankfully. Lamentations 4 says two things. Well, Lamentations 3 and 4. We're going to dip into Lamentations 3. But Lamentations 4 ends verse 22, the last verse in the chapter, essentially says, God will not let this continue. The first half says, your punishment will end, daughter Zion. He will not prolong your exile. Your punishment will end. The author of Lamentations knew that God would not let this atrocity, this rubbishness continue. It may not end as quickly as they hoped, but God will not let it continue. And why can Lamentations declare that in verse 22? Well, actually, it's because of a verse in chapter 3, 19 to 24, which you might want to turn to, which I think is one of the most important, if not the most important, passage in Lamentations. Chapter 3, verse 19. I remember my afflictions and my wanderings, the bitterness and the gall. I remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. God is compassion. God is love. God is faithful. And this will always lead him to act. Lamentations in the rubbishness of life says God is compassionate, God is loving, and God is faithful. That is his character and who he is. Therefore, I know he will act and intervene. Now, chapter 3, 55 to 57. I call on your name, Lord, from the depths of the pit. You heard my plea. Do not close your ears to my cry for relief. You came near when I called, and you said, do not fear. When things are rubbish, why have hope in God? Because of God's character. Because he is compassionate. He is love. And he is always faithful. And he will not let the situation go on. He is a God who acts. That truth will always have the final say. Do we know that? May not be as quick as we wanted, as Lamentation shows. May not be exactly in the way we want. But do we know that God's compassion, love, and faithfulness will always have the final word? Or let me put it another way. Do we want to believe that? Or re-believe that again? Do we want to believe that? Lamentations 4:22. God will not let it last. God will intervene because of who he is. So I remember that the words that my vicar said to me, my old vicar, when I was down in London. If you lost your house, if you lost your job, if you lost all your money, heaven forbid you lost your friends and family, is God's character enough for you? Is it enough? Is God's compassion, love, and faithfulness enough for you? Do you believe that truth will always have the final say, even when life is rubbish? Because of COVID, because of other reasons, like when my charity didn't go from strength to strength in the way I thought, when we fall off the wagon because of our own temptations, whatever the reason, whether it's deserved, undeserved, bad choices, bad luck, whatever, when life gets rubbish, will we put our hope in God's compassion, love, and faithfulness? A God who will always intervene. And it's a bit like planting a seed. If you plant an oak seed, the seed of an oak tree in the ground, that seed, because of its genetics, because of what it is, will always grow into an oak tree. Like it can't grow into another type of tree. It can't grow into a weed. It can't grow into a daffodil. The inner workings of that seed already dictate the outcome of what's going to happen. The inner workings, the very being of God, dictates how he is going to act. And he is a God who always intervenes. When things are rubbish, why have hope in God? And that is what the cross teaches us, isn't it? I mean, the cross teaches us many things. You know, we're in the season of Lent, leading up to Easter. The cross and resurrection teach us many things. But it teaches us, A, life is rubbish. The cross shows us that. Jesus, sinless, undeserved, taking punishment, suffering. Life is rubbish. God knows that. God joins in with that through the incarnate Son. But the resurrection shows us that God will always intervene. God will always have the victory. God will always have the final say, and death is defeated. This is the character of God. And let's make it clear, the cross didn't change God's character. God has always been a God of compassion and love. God has always been a God who intervened. Look at the Exodus. Look at the other miracles in the Old Testament. God has always been like that. And the cross is the fulfillment, the ultimate expression of the character of God. But he's always been like that. Always. And the writer of Lamentations knows this. That's why he can say, God is compassionate, loving and faithful, and he will intervene. Imagine if we live like that. Imagine if we could pray a prayer knowing that that was the case. Even when things are rubbish. I'm not saying it's easy. Not saying it's quick. Not saying, we can just wave a magic wand and make everything better. But what if we lent into that truth like the author of Lamentation does? It will end. When life is rubbish, we have hope in who God is. So we're going to move into a time where we're going to share the bread and wine together. And that's probably going to be the main response, actually. As we come and eat the bread and wine and share bread and wine together, let us remember who Jesus is, who God is, what he has done. That actually his love has the final say. And that represents that truth and reminds us of that truth as we gather as a community online in the building eventually. But I also encourage you this week, make some time for God. It may be directly after this service. Maybe you just want to do it straight away. Maybe it's a case of setting the alarm 5 minutes earlier so you get up 5 minutes early every day. Or maybe you have an evening this week which is free. And you're going to put it in a diary now and say, this is God's evening. I'm not going to watch TV. I'm not going to add in a Zoom chat or go for a walk with someone or whatever. This is God's evening. Like whatever your diary looks like. Just really want you to carve out some time for God. And I encourage us to lean into what Simon actually encouraged us to do last week. This idea of reality, yet so. Let us keep coming to God and be honest about the reality we're facing. Life is rubbish. Because of COVID, because of other stuff, whatever the truth is, let's be honest with God. Lamentation shows us we can bring it to God. What is the reality of the situation? Why is life rubbish? Have we had this intense situation happen? Have we had this intense pouring out to God? And yet we're just in the whimper and the mundaneness and the emptiness, which we thought, surely this would change now. We've had the intensity in chapter 3. Lamentations 4, it just continues and we don't know what to do. The past was better. If you're in that place, be honest with God. The reality. And then the yet. And I encourage you this week to keep doing what Simon said, but to fill that in with saying God is compassionate, loving and faithful. God is compassionate, loving and faithful. And like a seed that can only grow into what its DNA and inner workings tell it to, God can only lead to action. He can only lead to intervening and mercy and grace because he is compassionate, loving and faithful. And so let's say that. Let's say that mantra. Let's pray out those words. And then the so. Let's ask God, well, how do we respond? If I was to believe you are compassionate, loving and faithful, how would I respond in this situation? Or God, I'm trusting in that. So show me what to do next. Reality, let's be honest with God. Yet, let's remind ourselves of God's character and a God who acts. And so, God, if I really believe that, if I'm trying to re-believe that, if I'm trying to apply that, it's not easy, but if I'm trying to do that at the very least, how would I respond?